I am so excited to be back.
Jack, it's 2020.
2020, the year of...
change, new possibilities.
You know what, that's every year though, right?
I know, right? I love, it's always my favourite thing about New Year is this like collective naivety of people being like, this is my year. And I'm like, it was the same day yesterday, really. Like, there's no real difference.
No, this is a whole new decade, Neil.
My friend Daniel actually put it really well in that it's not about looking at it as like a rebirth of change. It's more of like a renewal. It's a re-energization of the goals that you had before, which I thought was quite good.
As if like everything is just some kind of construct in the minds of man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's all just marketing for brands to get you to start buying into new stuff in January.
That is incredibly cynical.
And I fall for it every year. I've bought 17 new equipment pieces for the gym. I've bought new gym gear. I've bought detox shakes. I haven't at all.
I always get jealous of people who go to the gym in the new year, because I know everyone is like, oh, look, it's those people who go to the gym for 1 month only. But you know what? Those are the people who haven't done it before and feel like, yeah, I can actually make a change. Whereas me, I've kind of resided to the fact that I'm going to be kind of rubbish forever.
I completely agree here. I feel like I'm one of the few people in the gym that actually quite likes the January newbies. I'm like, yeah, go you for getting in, whether you last a month, 2 months, or this is the start of your journey. Like, you know, well done for getting in there. And it's just, you can sense the energy in the gym of everyone trying. I think the only thing for me is, and it's not just the newbies, it's the old hats as well, is if your parents taught you how to share, the gym would be a lot easier. It's only hard because no one shares anything, and that's why you can't get what you need.
It's also hard because you're like lifting weights, right? That's a hard thing.
But you take a rest, and then like...
You rest every 30 seconds for another 35 seconds
before you do 8 repetitions. There's time to switch in and out.
I'm actually really upset because I thought you were going to disagree, and I thought we'd have some kind of, you know, contrasting viewpoint to progress the discussion.
If you'd asked me like 2 years ago, probably would have disagreed, but I've changed and I've grown, and now I fully embrace it.
Well, I would say that is a good thing, and this is a good thing.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yes, apologies for the large absence. It was mainly my fault. I was in Austria and then China, and now I'm back.
Yeah, it's like humble brag there. And I've just been sat in the studio all alone since then, waiting.
You could have gone home.
We actually have 3 episodes that are just me talking, but we figured that they would be quite boring.
Yeah, we listened back to them and we're like, Neil.
I mean, we know that I have the nicer voice to listen to, but, you know, a bit more animated. Don't look at me like that. No one can see the look. It's audio. You have to say something. I'm getting a look. I'm sorry. Can we carry on? So, it's our first episode of 2020, and we wanted to start this episode and this year by taking a look back and having a look at some of the biggest and most amazing stories that came out of 2019. And there was quite a few. It took a while to whittle it down to a top 10. So, Jack, I think you're going to kick us off, right?
Yes. One of my favorite stories, or collection of stories, because there was more than one involving this topic, was plastic bans.
It was a good, well, is it a good year for plastic? Or it was a bad year for plastic, which is a good year for people.
Yes, I'm upset you didn't kind of get on my plastic bans joke. You know, there's plastic bans.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's an indifferent year for plastic bands, which are actually more like rubber.
It's true.
But
that's why I call it a rubber band. That's why I didn't get it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Some people call them plastic bands.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know those people.
Linguistics jokes never go down well anywhere.
Okay, so plastic bands.
Plastic bands. So there have been lots of plastic bands. We all know that plastic is bad for the environment. They found microplastics in all kinds of places, like the sea and the air and fish and humans. And basically everywhere they found plastic. And they are not sure what kind of effects this will have on our bodies, our environment, and our worlds. So, lots of places are now like, we should ban plastics, including the European Union. including the European Union, who announced that they will be banning plastic cutlery, plastic plates, plastic straws, cotton buds, and food containers and polystyrene cups. Which makes sense. It really annoys me that we have these amazing parties, and then we're like, oh, by the way, that... the remains of this party will exist for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Like, no party is that good.
Yes.
So, we're not just talking about the European Union, because the Indian state of Tamil Nadu has imposed a full ban on all single-use plastics.
Amazing.
Yeah, 80 million people, so larger than the UK, who will now be plastic-free.
Wow.
Single-use plastic-free. They'll still be allowed to use longer-term plastics.
Shows that it's possible, though. You've just got to make the decision and make it happen.
Canada will be doing something similar to the EU. Yes, way to go, Canada. Costa Rica have put in a new law banning all styrofoam cups, containers, and packaging. Bali's plastic ban has gone into effect. Panama has banned plastic bans. Thailand is phasing out microbeads, you know, the stuff that you have in face washes. Although, it's important to note that you shouldn't get one with ground almonds instead, because they, like, cut up the skin.
Yeah, they can cause little, like, capillary damage, and so it's not good for you at all. Also, we should just reduce the amount of almonds that we're producing again, because that's a whole other conversation.
But while we are on this topic, I am super excited about all of these plastic bans, but the biggest cause, which people don't seem to be talking about too much, are in man-made clothing fibers, and everyone is still wearing those quite happily. And I think we're going to see in 2020 a lot of discussion about actually going back to natural fibers that break down in nature, because things like polyester or nylon, which may in fact be the same thing, they are what are causing the majority of plastics to get into our waterways and environment.
I didn't know that. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because the point of the man-made ones, it was because it was cheaper and quicker to produce.
And also have some certain properties. And moths don't eat them, which I guess is good.
But that's going to be whole companies out that just don't even produce natural fibre clothes. That's going to be really interesting, because there are brands that, I mean, apart from the fact that there are just cheap, affordable brands that do it, there are also brands who specifically work with those fabrics. So that's quite interesting.
We'll see what happens in 2020.
And what it's going to do for a lot of, like, you know, kind of faux brands that don't do, like, you know, they do vegan leather and all that kind of stuff, because that's all heavy plastic and...
Yeah, like, it's true. In fact, I've met some people, some environmentalists, who are big on using animal fur. I mean, not big, not huge, but saying it's much more ethical than using plastic fur. But that's a whole other debate, not for this. What I'm saying, 2019, a good year for being bad for plastic.
The next one I want to talk about is cars.
Cars.
So this is one that I've sounded off on before, not necessarily on this podcast, but... with friends and on social media, because there is the technology for, you know, hybrid cars. Electric cars have made massive strides, and so this is one of those radical changes that needs to happen, where I'm like, they, like, governments need to just be like, fine, we have hybrid cars now, there is no reason to be making a purely fossil fuel driven car anymore. And yeah, it's one that, you know, obviously I appreciate that there's money involved in doing that, but it's something that we definitely could do. And it's 2019 saw some great strides in the automakers industry towards a greener future. And so basically this was around a lot of the big giants in the automakers industry kind of putting their money where their mouth is. And they've collectively committed $225 billion by 2023 for electric vehicle production. And Volkswagen, which is one of the largest in the world, has put aside a $44 billion as like an electric offensive, and have promised to abandon all development of fossil fuel driven cars by 2026, which is a massive deal. Also quite smart on Volkswagen, considering they were the, like, the naughty child for years for avoiding pollution issues with their cars.
Yes, they
And actually hiding issues. It makes sense for them to try and get ahead of the game on that. And I just think, to kind of put it into context, like, in the US, the cars are responsible for 75% of their CO2 pollution and 2/3 of their smog pollution. So, like, cars are a big deal. And it's this, again, it's that thing to the point of plastics, where because we have them and cars are just something we don't think about, they're just our everyday mode. You know, no one thinks to try and change it, but actually it is one of those decisions where there's no reason that we shouldn't be driving hybrid cars now that, you know, can run off electricity most of the time. You know, apart from the fact that it would just make for a lot quieter streets, it's just, yeah, there's no reason for us to just be driving around purely petrol or diesel cars anymore. So cars was, I thought, was a really good one for 2019. I'm excited to see that progression. And I think in the way that I think, oh God, how long ago was it? Like 8 years or so ago, the government did the drive where you got, they gave you money towards a new car if you updated your old car to a more fuel efficient and emissions efficient one. They need to do that again for electric to encourage people to swap over finally.
That makes a lot of sense. What about charging stations?
Again, so that's where, to my point of like, obviously I appreciate that it takes money to get involved. Hybrid cars is the first port of call, because obviously you then have petrol consumption, but it's heavily reduced because then the car switches over to its electric engine. Whereas for purely electric cars, that's where there's a huge infrastructure money input needed, because there aren't as many charging points. That becomes a conversation of like, would they, you know, do you put them in shopping malls in their car parks so that you can pay for your ticket and for fuel if you're doing it, so you have a charge there? That's part of a much bigger conversation, which I appreciate isn't going to happen overnight. But I do think when you have hybrids that could heavily impact the amount of emissions going out in the world and the amount of fossil fuel consumption within cars, there's no reason to not be doing it.
I get really annoyed at cars, you know.
Why?
Like I often walk down the streets and I see the same cars just sitting there parked. And I'm like, wow, cars spend like 90% of their lives just not doing anything.
Yeah, 100%. And I say all of this as someone that loves driving. Like, driving is one of my favorite things. When I was younger, I couldn't wait to learn to drive. I grew up around cars, like my brother, my father, car dealers, and they work on cars. And so it's just, yeah, I've always loved driving. But I just think it's my love of driving and want to drive can't outweigh the needs of the planet.
Well,
I mean, I'll argue about it, but I'm not going to win it.
Trees up. That's my next one.
Yeah, trees up.
Trees up.
Well, I mean, they are getting pretty tall.
Yeah, they just keep on growing.
Yeah, those redwoods we saw in America are really tall.
Ah, yeah, that's it. I just wanted to really talk about how I saw some tall trees.
Trees are tall.
And that's a good thing. So the world, there was a research study by NASA this year, and it realized that the world's tree cover was actually 5% up on a few decades ago, which is cool. Like, you don't really think when you think about, oh, Australia being on fire and the Amazon being burnt down to make room for cow farming, you don't think like, oh, we're ever going to catch up on this kind of stuff. But the world is 5% greener. So good things are happening, mostly in China, actually. They're massively outperforming with their new tree initiatives. And trees are good for all kinds of reasons. One, they take carbon out of the air so they can build themselves, which in itself is amazing. Two, they provide homes and habitats for animals. Three, they prevent against like desertification. That's like the encroachment on deserts, on fertile lands, not the encroachment of delicious puddings. And so, yeah, we're up 5% green cover. China is up like 11%. India is up 7%. The EU is up 4%. The USA is up 2%. Even Brazil and Indonesia, famous in our media for getting rid of their trees, in the last 2 decades have gone up 0.5%.
And was it Ethiopia that planted something like 350 million in a day?
Ethiopia planted 353 million trees in one day.
Which I can't even get my head around like how that happens and how that works.
Yeah, it was actually 12 hours, I think. I guess it worked out something like 8 trees per person. I mean, but then you have to have every person. And I've never seen a baby plant a tree.
True. But I think it's one of those things when you listen to these stats, though, it's really important not to become complacent, because it's weird that we hear these stories about Brazil and burning of the rainforest, but then to hear that actually at the same time, but overall it's up, it's really easy to suddenly sit back and be like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. But actually it's really important to know that, like, for how long it takes these trees to grow, it's really easy to go back the other way, and actually the time it would take the 350 million trees in Ethiopia to grow, you could easily be destroying every single other tree in Ethiopia. So it's important that these are positives and the world is greener, but we're also doing a lot that's, slowing that progress down.
There's also a scale thing as well, which is that, like, New Zealand are committed to planting 1 billion trees in the next decade, right? Which is great. But recent studies say we need like a trillion trees planted to kind of stave off the effects of climate change for the next 20 years. So realistically, we need 1,000 initiatives the size of New Zealand in order to prevent what is a huge climate problem, which could happen. Like, we can do that. Ethiopia did 353 million in a day, in 12 hours, actually. And so, yeah, it's like, good, green up. But let's see if the next decade we can get it up from like 5% to more like 30%.
Because the Queen has her one as well, doesn't she? It's the Canopy Initiative, where she it's all around the Commonwealth. They've been getting different Commonwealth countries to not just plant trees, but also protect more and more of their forests. So I think it's also, it's not just that single country initiative, but it's then actually countries joining up and doing it together so that like one doesn't necessarily feel responsible for everything.
I like that you said one. It's like you were talking as if you were the Queen.
Yes, one. My husband and I. I think that's kind of leads on to my next one quite well. So the other thing I think was great for 2019 was what has been described as the youthquake. Politicalization and activation of young people around the world. In politics, in activism, from kind of runnings of countries to the environment. I think obviously climate change is the biggest one with my hero, Greta Thunberg, which I've spoken about multiple times on this podcast.
Greta who?
Thunberg. Greta is a great example of the mobilization of young people today. How her speaking out on climate change and the climate crisis and the mass extinction that we're going into has galvanized the entire world with weekly climate strikes. Millions upon millions of people have hit the streets in cities around the world to protest against inaction of governments to help fight climate change. And further to that, in UK politics, in our recent election, two-thirds of the over 3 million people who registered to vote for the election were under 35, and young people are seeing how it's going to affect them and how the people that are making decisions aren't necessarily going to be around to feel those effects, and they're starting to get annoyed with it, from things about the younger generations never being able to buy a house to, again, as I said, the effects of climate change. But also another great example is in New Zealand with their recent elections, the amount of elected officials under 30 doubled, with some of their elected officials being as young as 18, and they were balancing going out and canvassing while working in McDonald's to
pay
their
rent.
We
spoke about this separately, and I was like, I am fully supportive of young people being involved, but I remember myself being an 18-year-old, and I would not want him in charge of any kind of governance.
But I do think, if you think about how long ago we were 18, I think actually 18-year-olds nowadays are a lot more switched on, a lot more aware, and a lot more engaged. And I think when you've got people like Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand, or you've got Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez in America, there is a lot of younger people inspiring everyone. And actually, the younger people are the voice of reason. And I think that's kind of why they're a lot more politicized. And so I think that's been a really great thing. And I think as much as, you know, elections may have not gone the way that people expected because of the impact of a youth quake that that news has reported on, I think it does show where everything is going eventually.
Youth. Eventually the youth will be older.
But the opinions and the beliefs and ethos of those youth.
So good. When we get together, everything's so nice.
All right, Jack, what's next?
So this one is my story of the year. This is my story of the decade. I cannot stress enough how I think that this encapsulates the state of the modern world and how positive change can come about in the world that we live in.
Brace yourself, people.
It is something huge and impactful, and I know you think I'm being trite, but I am serious when I say that my story of 2019, my number one story, my good news story, is the Greggs vegan sausage roll.
I can't even keep a straight face with this. You've not stopped talking about this bloody sausage roll. Yeah. Yeah, congrats, Jack. You can now get back on the fast food baked goods train.
Okay, firstly, thank you for just referring it to as a sausage roll rather than a vegan sausage roll, because I think that is the default that we should go to. You know, you could be like, I'll have the sausage roll or the meat sausage roll. I think that's where we need to try and achieve.
Although, wasn't it that actually came up in the House of Lords or Commons as a thing where people were like, you shouldn't be allowed to call it a vegan sausage roll because it's not sausage, because sausage is meat.
Yeah, I always
so it needs a new name. And they're, I mean, one, like, as if there's not more important things to talk about in government. But yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting one about the, like, you know, the not beef beef and all of that kind of conversation.
So I have a whole list of reasons why the vegan sausage roll encapsulates. I mean, it's not just because the sausage roll is tasty. There's a whole series of things that it symbolizes.
And you're going to tell us them now, aren't you?
I'm going to tell them in explicit, excruciating detail. Okay. And no one knows when this finishes, so they have to keep listening until I'm done.
We'll put a timestamp in the episode notes.
Yeah. Skip to 14 minutes, 35 seconds if you don't want to hear Jack talk about the vegan sausage roll. Okay, one is vegan. Okay. That's
yes. Well done, Sherlock.
That's good, right? There are lots of reasons why veganism is good. It's better for the planet. It tends to be better for people's health. It's better for the animals, not just like the animals that get slaughtered to go into the meat, but also animal raising of animals and the dairy industry tends to be quite problematic, especially in fast food, where you have no relationship with the suppliers. You just kind of get to the end product. And historically, that has been quite bad. I mean, it's crazy that you can get two pieces of chicken from KFC for like £2. Like, how much do they pay for those chicken? How are those chicken treated in order to get there? So veganism in fast food has a lot of ethical and environmental benefits. So great, we now have another option for that, and it's popular. But on that, more of a second point is that it tastes pretty much identical as a normal sausage roll. Have you had the vegan sausage roll?
No, I was actually just thinking that. Can we go after this and find a local Greggs?
I mean, I can tell you it's like 16 minutes walk away. I know the specific route.
But, yeah, well, the only thing is actually, and this is what we did discuss, is that, so because I can't have gluten. I shouldn't have gluten because I have an intolerance to it. That's where I struggle at the moment, because it's either one or the other. You either get the gluten-free, but it's with the meat, or you get the vegan, but it's with gluten. And so I need someone, please, to do gluten-free and vegan alternative meat.
Yes, and when that happens, I'm sure it will be a great day for Neil Thornton specifically.
But yeah, there will be other people like me, and I'm willing to, for now, put up with the pain and discomfort to try some of the vegan sausage roll.
So the main point I'm getting to on this is that it is a viable alternative. It's not like, oh, I'm going to have the step down, right? It's actually, oh, I'll have the one that's kind of a little bit less greasy and maybe even nicer than the original. And like, that's the first time I think that has happened in like a convenience food industry, right?
Yeah, because we've spoken about things like the Impossible Burger and stuff before, which I think, you know, are so on par with how tasty they are that you would actively order them, but they're not readily available. And I don't know the quick fast food, like grab and go type places that have kind of reached that level. And even so with a lot of like the stuff you can buy from the shops.
And that's why I think this is a turning point in fast food industry. We will look back to the Greg's Vegan Sausage Roll Day and go, yes, yes, yes.
And Wagamama's Seitan, Seitan. We still didn't decide how that was pronounced last time we spoke about it.
Seitan.
Their Seitan katsu curry. Great.
Don't hijack my... No, don't look. I've got four more points on this.
That's just... No, we can...
I've got four more points, and if you don't interrupt, I promise to be very quick.
You just said the point I'm trying to get to, and you can't then have 4 points afterwards.
So the other points...
Jesus.
...are that it's British food. Okay, now British food kind of has a bad reputation internationally, and we generally, especially as like London-based people, do a really bad job of keeping track of our heritage foods. Like we don't really engage in them because we get to explore all the other tastes of the world which are being imported into the city. But, and also when you do get British food out, high quality British food, it's very expensive. But this is nice to see like a British food which is quality and being celebrated and being like encouraged. And so that's really nice. The success of the vegan sausage roll led to a £7 million bonus payout to Greg's staff. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, excellent for the people involved. It's ushered in a new movement. Like, we've just seen KFC start with its chicken replacement burger. We've seen Burger King start offering a meat alternative burger. So not just, oh, it's the vegetable burger, a meat alternative burger. So we're seeing the repercussions of the success of the Greg sausage roll on individual workers' incomes, and we're seeing it in other fast food joints trying to keep up. That's amazing.
But we've also seen the repercussions of KFC trying to put out a vegan alternative and then not managing to actually serve that to people that order it. And they've had so many complaints where they've accidentally served chicken. And their official response was, yeah, hold our hands up, it's not good.
Yeah, I mean, they should serve the meat replacement when people order it.
Yeah.
That's, teething troubles. Get it? Teething. Because they're eating.
Next point.
The final point is that it has annoyed all of the right terrible people. Like, all of the people that have complained about it very loudly in public forums, they're all awful people, and I'm glad they're annoyed. That's my final point.
Fair? Fair?
The Greg sausage roll.
I'm actually quite looking forward to finally getting to try it.
Right? And I am on an affiliate deal, so for everyone that gets sold in relation to this, I get 10% of the profits.
Cool. Fair? All right. What's up next?
Well, I want to go from consuming food to the other end of the spectrum and talk about poop.
Oh my God. I know what this is about. This is going to be about India's sanitation, isn't it?
It is going to be about...
I remember reading this story. It's actually, like, it seems silly to talk about it, but it's actually massive.
It is, yeah. They had a massive poop issue, which was essentially there wasn't good sanitation. And for a lot of Indian people, they didn't have access to decent toilets and for the waste to be taken away. And there were safety issues. And so the government went on a big sanitation drive. And in the last 5 years, they've made 90 million toilets and 93 households now have access, which has meant 500 million people now do not have to poop outside anymore. Which is crazy when you think about it, like, considering how, like, if I go to the toilet, I want to have like 7 doors around me, like 7 layers of walls, so I can be totally tranquil.
Yeah, completely. And I just don't think, like, when I first read it, I just hadn't quite understood that was the current situation before this. You know, it's like 500 million people is a huge amount. Like, that isn't that about half the population? Is it a billion
third.
In third? And like, yeah, it's incredible that that's how it was. So I think that's a huge, huge change.
Yeah, and there have been problems with it, which I'm not going to go into now. Like, lots of problems about how it was done. Maybe there was a lot of waste. And I'm not really educated enough on the issue. But this story really was for 2019, inspired by Nepal, who declared that the country no longer has any household where there's open defecation. It's called open defecation free in 2019. 8 years ago, 9 million people in Nepal didn't have access to clean sanitation facilities. And now, like, it's totally like the global north in terms of toilet sanitation.
I was going to say, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's so shocking for us being from Britain to hear, and you think that going into 2020 that this is still the case in a lot of places around the world, that, like, this basic hygiene functionality isn't accessible to a lot of people, and hopefully the next decade is going to be the time that fully changes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like, it's not just, I make a joke about, like, how having somewhere nice to poop, but, like, if it's not properly dealt with, it gets into the water supply. Like, there were talks of women being attacked when they went to go to some kind of toilet in, like, the countryside to be able to find, like, a quiet corner. It really changes lives, and it reduces illness, improves safety, all kinds of amazing factors. And so, one, it's we take it for granted so much, and two, it's amazing that countries can do this and there are these drives for it. Puts the Greg sausage roll in perspective, actually.
Definitely. Okay, so next on the list is one that I want to talk about, and again, this is another one that's kind of like an overarching theme with a few different bits to it. But 2019 was also, in many ways, a great year for human rights. And at the same time, you know, I think, you know, well, actually, you could probably say that it was mixed in that there were attempts to roll back human rights in places around the globe. There have been many countries making big changes, and this can come from big changes for the LGBTQ community. Taiwan legalized same-sex marriage in May 2019, and by doing so became the first country in Asia to do so. And then also Northern Ireland followed suit as well, legalizing same-sex marriage, which goes into effect this month, actually, in January 2020. Northern Ireland also continued a sea change by finally decriminalizing abortion, because up until this year, unless the expectant's mother's life was in danger, abortion was illegal, and the mother and the medical team who performed one were open to prosecution. So yeah, so there were some really great stories that came out of 2019. Obviously, we are also aware of, even in America, the attempt to roll back certain rights and access to healthcare and things like abortion for women. So again, it's the one thing that seems to be an overarching theme of 2019 and the things that have happened is it's also things that we should never take for granted, because for every step forward we take, there are people that potentially want to try to take us half a step back. But yeah, those were just some good things that I thought worth highlighting.
Well, as Tony Benn used to say, the famous left-wing politician, you can never win the war. It's just the same battle fought over and over again until
one side dies.
Well, just slow incremental.
I love that you came prepped with quotes today.
Yeah, I mean, good. If anyone knows that quote, I butchered it. Really, he was such an eloquent man. And yeah, I think, I hope no one that knows the quote is listening. That's all I can say. Poaching is down. That was one of my good stories.
That's a great story.
Yeah, so there's been lots of anti-poaching in lots of places. They use like modern technology with like drones to help analyze it from and to cover more areas of ground, which is great. But the specific story I was looking at was in Kenya, poaching rates have dropped by 85% for rhinos and 78% for elephants in the last 5 years, which is pretty high. In South Korea, no, there are no rhinos in South Korea. In South Africa, the number of rhinos killed by poachers has fallen 25%. Which is a fifth annual decrease in a row. And in Mozambique, one of the wildest wildlife reserves in Africa went a year without losing a single elephant to poaching.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so we've got... I hate poaching stories, because on the one hand, I'm like, wow, there are people that like are really willing to do horrible things.
Yeah.
To, I guess, you know, there are desperate economic conditions, which might... Some people might argue justify the actions that they take, but generally, like, killing those animals is a terrible thing for the world, and anti-poachers are managing to reduce those in innovative and impressive ways. So good for anti-poaching.
And I think also 2019, well, it's not necessarily that they happened in 2019, but there were loads of great reports out in 2019 about the positive effects that conservation efforts over the last decade have had. I think it was humpback whales have gone up from being almost extinct from over poaching to being up to about, there's like 25,000 of them now. So they're back up to like 95% of their original numbers. So, and I think tigers in India are on their increase as well. So there's definitely been a lot of good news stories. I think China's opening its biggest protected wildlife reserve that's got something like 1500 pandas, so I think there's been a lot of really
great
stories
there.
I know, I have such a thing for pandas, just the stupidest animal but the best, like they're so silly.
You have this thing with orca whales, don't you, that they shouldn't be called killer whales, they should be called sea pandas?
No, I don't at all. I said to you that I'd seen a stand-up comedy gig on TV where this guy was talking about how they should call them sea pandas so that then they come across nicer. And we were then talking about how it's like, well, no, but it's also underplaying how savagely intelligent and murderous that they are.
Yeah, I don't think we should put pandas in the same ballpark as orcas.
No, it's like a great disguise for the orca. I'm like, no, I'm just a sea panda.
Have you ever seen a red panda?
Yes.
I love red pandas.
Red pandas are very cute. Not as silly as pandas.
They're pretty silly.
I was about to say, not silly as a panda.
I scared one once. I was in like this enclosure and I accidentally like turned around and it wasn't expecting me and its little scared face was so cute. And then I was like,
you could do it again.
Yeah. And that's how the numbers dropped by 95%. Green energy in the UK. In fact, green energy everywhere, but green energy generally is doing well.
It's been a very good year for energy stories.
Yeah, it's. But when I say this, I mean energy generation and electricity usage in homes and businesses. So I don't mean like green energy in cars, for example. I mean green energy for household and industry use is doing really well. In the UK, coal use is massively down. Good, because it's very polluting. Wind power is very up, which is great, especially in the UK, because we have access to the North Sea, which gives us lots of free wind. I mean, the wind is free, but the building it isn't. Building the turbines isn't.
Got it.
And that comes from on the back of a report from a company called Lazard, well, an industry benchmarking agency called Lazard, who have said that new wind and solar power is below the cost of keeping existing coal and nuclear plants running. So it's cheaper now.
Because this is even with subsidies for it, isn't it? They've said that it's not the subsidies that make it cheaper. It's now just cheaper to produce and use renewable energies.
Yeah, and a lot of the old arguments are like, oh, well, it's more expensive. That one is now done. The only other one is that
it's not always Sunday, it's not always windy.
Exactly. But it's always sunny somewhere in the world, mm-hmm. and it's always windy somewhere in the world.
But I think this is that ties into like the hybrid car thing. Like if we've got it, then the point is that should be the default. And then you have, if you need it, fossil fuel as the backup, it shouldn't ever be the norm to be using fossil fuels for anything.
Yes. And so the UK ran 43% clean energy last year. There was a report out, actually. The report I saw was like, oh, 52%. But that included like 9% or something of energy brought in from abroad, which I don't think counts as clean energy, you know, because someone's generated that. We're really bad at being like, look at the UK's figures, but it's because it's outsourcing the emissions to another country. So I've reduced that down to 43%.
Fair.
Which I think is fair. And there's lots more, like California's doing well, Germany's doing well, New Zealand has big plans. But I want to talk about like the countries that don't tend to get much of a mention. So for example, Chile has reached its 2025 clean energy targets 6 years ahead of schedule, along with eight other Latin America countries, have set a target production of 70% renewable energy by 2030. Now that is more than double what the EU is planning. Okay, so we think about Europe and we think about the UK and we think about America, but the countries who have smaller economies than us are doing more to move to renewable energies quicker than us. And one, that's amazing, good on those guys. And two, it's a little shameful on us and we need to try harder.
Can I be devil's advocate? Is there something in the smaller economies? Is it also because they don't necessarily have as much entrenched infrastructure as places in Europe do, so it's easier to adopt new technologies and infrastructure?
So some would argue that, but others would argue, well, that also means they've benefited least from the current carbon emissions or the carbon emissions of the last 30, 40, 50 years, and therefore they should be shouldering less of a burden than the countries who have exploited the carbon
and built their economies on it. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's more than fair.
Well, good. You speak to the UK and I'll go to Chile and congratulate them.
Done. All right. Oh. All right. So we're on to our last good thing of 2019. And actually, this perfectly follows on from your one about green energy. And this is a really, really big one that actually finishes 2019 and starts in 2020 for the next decade. And that is the announcement of the Earthshot Prize. And so we've got a guest in studio who is going to talk a little bit more about that now.
Ours is a world of wonder. Every day it reminds us of its beauty. But it also warns us that we can no longer take life as we know it for granted. But humans have an extraordinary power to solve the greatest of challenges. The most audacious of them all, to land a man on the moon. the moonshot, a seemingly impossible task that over a single decade became a reality. And along the way, united the world. This year, Prince William and a global alliance launched the most prestigious environment prize in history, the Earthshot Prize. A decade of action to repair our planet.
So yes, that was Sir David Attenborough, and that was a little...
Can you imagine we got him in and we're just like, can you sit here while we talk about nonsense with our boring, uninformed opinions?
Maybe he loves Greggs.
I think he would be on my side with Greggs.
Oh my God, I would just...
He'd be like, yes.
I would lose my collective to meet David Attenborough. But yes, the Earthshot Prize was announced just before Christmas, and it is an initiative from Prince William and... the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's Royal Foundation. And the Earthshot Prize is billed as the most prestigious environmental prize in history. And it's a bid to galvanize a decade of action to repair the planet.
They should speak to Chile and the Latin American countries.
They probably did. They engaged with over, I think it was over 60 different organizations around the world as they planned and built this initiative. The Earthshot Prize aims to encourage and inspire people across the world to find innovative new solutions to some of the gravest problems facing the Earth. So it's a monetary prize that they're going to award to 5 winners a year over the next 10 years, with yearly award ceremonies in different cities every year from 2001, with the aim that by the end of the decade, they'll have 50 actionable solutions to the world's greatest problems. So by 2030.
How much money are we talking?
That is, they said multi-million pound. There's no set figure yet. So more announcements are coming out over the next kind of weeks and months as we go into 2020. But yeah, so the prize was designed and is initially run by the Royal Foundation and the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. But the long-term plan is for it to actually eventually become its own independent organization. And Prince William, the Duke's hopes are to build the biggest coalition of scientists, economists, activists, leaders, governments, businesses, philanthropists, cities and countries ever established in the field. And the funding and the organization itself is supported by a global coalition of philanthropists and other organizations. So yeah, I think this one... it's just the perfect finisher for 2019, considering, you know, that we're recording this while, you know, Australia is burning at a horrifically large rate. There are fires in Brazil still and all of these things that are happening. So actually to have something like this as we go into 2020 to help centralize all of these thought processes and action plans, I thought this was a really great one to finish on. It's called Earthshot because of the term moonshot, which became a colloquial term for innovation during the 60s, during the race to the moon. So it was one under JFK when he, you know, the chase to the moon basically happened within a decade. And innovations that came out of the technology advancements included things like MRI scanners. And so it became a term, moonshot, when it was your attempt to go beyond and to find the new thing. So I thought Earthshot Prize was actually very well done. So everyone should definitely go and follow Earthshot on Instagram and Twitter. And I think it's earthshot.org.
Or google.com and then...
Or google.com and Earthshot Prize. But yeah, I think that one's going to be a great one to see how that one evolves over the next 10 years.
I look forward to it solving climate change.
Me too. So that's it. That is our wrap-up of 2019. And we're going into 2020 full of hope, optimism, and positivity. And hopefully a lot more good things to come.
Yes, including next episode.
We've got a great one for you next episode, actually. We've got a guest with us who we're very excited to share her story with you.
What a great story.
It is a great story, but that's all you're getting. You'll have to tune back in for that one. And in the meantime, you know the rules. Don't forget to follow us. Come and say hi on social media at A Good Good Thing. Let us know what good things are happening to you or anything else you want us to look at or talk about. But otherwise, wishing you a great 2020. Remember to do what you can when you can to make things better around where you are.
And also to recontextualize things, to realize that actually there are a lot of good things around us, even when we think that we're under pressure and can't think of any of them.
Definitely.
Terrible psych advice from some guy at a microphone.
Where's your therapy from? Yeah. Google. That's where my diploma is.
Yeah, I just tell people to have better lives. It works really well.